Hello, everybody, and welcome to Libromancy, a podcast about the magic of books. I'm Josh, and today I'm going to be talking about An Inheritance of Magic by Benedict Jacka. So let's inherit the magic of books. Now, first off, I want to say this is Benedict Jacka is the same author who we listened and read to the Fated series with Alex Ferris. The Alex Ferris series is its true name. Fated is the first book in the series. And so this is the next kind of thing that he has been putting out there. Now, there is a lot that Benedict Jacka has put on his website about this book and about kind of the world building, and a lot that he's put on with the Alex Ferris series. And it's something interesting that he does. And I kind of like that he is not afraid to delve into like more specifics about certain things that maybe don't necessarily impact the book or that can impact the book, but are just kind of extra and they take up more space in the book. And so he puts them on his website, which makes it accessible for those who want it, but without forcing those who don't to want to have to get through it to get to the, you know, better parts of the book, which, not saying that it can't be interesting, but a lot of it could be very dry, you know, like, oh, this is how this ice power works, or this is how this works. Now, let's talk a bit about this book. I've read that The Inheritance of Magic is a great book. It just came out in 2023. It is the first in a series, kind of an indeterminate length series. He wants to keep writing this book or this series for quite a while. I think he's really laid the bones that he can start to do some of that and even more. Now, I guess there is one little criticism I want to put at this book right away, and that is that this book almost feels like a very setup heavy book, that he is propping up the rest of the series on this one book. Now, I say that is kind of a negative. It's not that bad. It just feels like there's a lot of investment into learning kind of the basics of this book and figuring out exactly kind of what's happening. And there's not this sounds wrong, but there is a lot of excitement and things that happen, but there's also a lot of period of unexcitement where things are progressing, but doesn't feel like there's very many stakes to it or much stakes to it. And that's fine. It's not bad. It's not good. It's a really setup heavy book. And so that's something that I'm excited to see, you know, what the next book's going to be like going out. This one, it didn't feel like I had like a definite plan of what's going to happen in this book until maybe 50% of the way through it. And then even then, I wasn't really sure what the end goal of the book was. Now, I know that he can do these end goal, you know, have an end goal in mind when he writes the books, because he's done it with the Fated series or the Alex Ferris series. And I really think that the Alex Ferris series is really, really good at being that flavor of the week combined with like a long-term progress and plan towards a finishing series. That was done really well, and I think he can do it again for this one. I'm confident. I was expecting more end-level Alex Ferris series versus beginner level. So in a non-spoilery kind of way, just to go over kind of the things I'm always trying to look at and review things on, which would be the cop-out, you know, characters, atmosphere, the writing, the plot, you know, my interest level, the logics of it, and then my enjoyment. And interest, investment, / enjoyment level, they are very, very similar. They're kind of just, these are the things that help me, as you guys know, to, you know, understand what it is I'm liking about this book. So, characters, there are a lot of characters, and it took me kind of a while to figure out everything and who everybody was. Well, he does a very good job of making sure that you know who is who and like how they are, how they interact, their temperaments. I think he does a good job of separating each character into its own, you know, character. But sometimes there are a lot of them, and sometimes I was a little bit like, okay, now what's this character's deal again? What's this character's deal again? Oh yeah, I remember now. This is good. Some of them felt like they had weird kind of roles to play, but I think we're going to get more of that as the series goes on, which I am excited for. Now, the atmosphere. This one is an interesting one. There's almost too much atmosphere in this book. Benedict Jacka is a great writer. He lives in London, I'm pretty sure, which makes sense that he would know the street names and the things like this. I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't care what the name of the street is that you're running down. I don't care how far of a walk it is. I kind of care about how far of a walk it is from here to from point A to point B. But for the most part, I mean, there were parts where it was fine. But there were parts where it was just like, okay, you're wandering around looking for a well, which is kind of something you use the magic with here. And you told me you're walking down this street, then you crossed into this street, and you're telling me how these alleys line up. And I'm like, I just don't care. Just tell me you were looking for them, that it was really hard. Or, you know, you went down a couple alleys. I went running down my street. I don't need the name of that street because I am not going to remember what street you live on or what street you're running on. Maybe that's on me, but that is too much information. Like, that's just it is. I don't need to know that level of detail. But other than that, I mean, I thought the atmosphere was really well. There are scenes where we really feel like he is in danger. there are scenes where I can feel the kind of giddiness and like the excitement or like the atmosphere of the church he's in. Like those parts were all really good. It was just a little bit of that. This is the street that I'm on, and maybe like he's using it with an actual map, but I'm just not going to go pull out a map and be like, oh, this is exactly where he is, and this is exactly where that was, because maps change and that's not going to stay the same. So that was fine. The writing was really good. I thought that he did a good job of explaining things. He kept the stakes kind of up and up. The stakes kept going up, but the, you know, really we had that release of tension. We'd move forward. He's a good writer. He wrote that whole series. It's very good. This is, of course, just the next step up. It's the beginning of another series, which is kind of the first time he's had to rewrite a new series. So, like, of course, I think we're going to step back a little bit, but, like, we're still moving forward in a good spot. Now, our plot. This is interesting. Stephen Oakwood, our main character, doesn't know a lot of things about this world. I mean, he does, but like the magic side of things, because it's been hidden, he doesn't know a lot. This plot takes a long time to kind of figure out. We've got many plots. We've got a half plot from this part. We've got a plot from here. We've got grand arching over plots that are figuring things out. We've got like secret plots that are coming in that we don't really know anything about. And it's good. These are all good things, but I felt like I needed to know from chapter one, let's say at the end of chapter one, I felt like I needed more of a directional guide, like, hey, this is kind of where the book is heading. Now, I didn't really get that. I got weird parts of it, right? It's hard to explain without going into spoilers. So let's just skip this for a second. We'll get back into it. The investment, yeah, it was really, once I got into it, and that took about 30%, I think, maybe to chapter 7 or 8, and then I was really invested. It was a little slower and just tougher to figure out what was going on. Like, what's my reason for keeping to read, right? The logic, it was really good. I liked it. And the enjoyment was really there, especially in the later half of the book. Like I said, the first half of the book was a really little bit iffy. I'm not sure. Iffy is not the word I want to use there. It's more like it just was a slower start. Now let's get back and get into spoilers. Let's talk about some stuff with this book. This was just, you know what? Okay, let's just talk a little bit about the book. Stephen Oakwood, he is a Druecrafter, which means he can do magic. But in this world, kind of on the whole, everybody thinks that Druecraft is kind of like this, like, oh, it's just it's like your multi-marketing level scheme where you're selling something that doesn't really work, to give people things. It does work. It is powerful. He finds out that there's this secret society of families who are basically monopolizing it, and they have all these powerful things. He learns that since he is, he's related to this Ashford family, and that's who he's mostly dealing with, Lucilla and Tobias Ashford. Now, I did do the audiobook, so hopefully I can say their names right, but he had a good British accent that I'm not sure I can follow his pronunciation of everything. He gets kind of found out by the Ashwood family that he's related to. He gets involved in some of their hijinks, and then he has to, you know, protect one of them while still protecting himself and investigating the disappearance of his father, figuring out why his mother left. There is so much going on in this book. It makes it very exciting and very good. But Stephen Oakwood doesn't really know a lot about the Game of Houses or Druecraft. He's kind of being manipulated. He's being pushed around. Lucilla tries to kidnap him. That was just like, come on, Lucilla. Like, you are bad. But there's just so much to talk about. I don't even know where to start. Let's start with the Ashfords. Charles Ashford, the grandfather, basically hates our main character, Stephen Oakwood. Now, with the title of An Inheritance of Magic, I was kind of expecting, okay, he's going to get brought into this family. He's going to be either exceptionally talented or not, or he's going to be talented and hide it, or not talented and fake it. You know, he's going to be doing this, but he's going to be into the family, and he's going to have to navigate this new family and this new world. No, he stays outside of the family the whole time, right? This was part of a little bit of a broken expectation on my part, where I was like, okay, he's going to inherit, he's going to go in the family. No, he stays on the out. They are very antagonistic towards him the whole time. Even Tobias Ashford, who we learn is his half-brother later, along with Bridget Ashford. I think she's the sister, the half-sister who he meets at the very beginning of the book in a roundabout way. And I don't think her name is actually mentioned in the book. It's kind of online. I read some supplementary stuff online just to kind of keep my head up, because it's been a little bit since I read it. But Stephen Oakwood, he lives with his cat Hobbs. He lives in an apartment. He's kidnapped. He's brought back into this world. He's trying to just survive and like grow while finding his father, because his father had to leave abruptly one day. He's been gone for years. There's just so much that I feel like I need to talk about that we're missing over. I'm trying to keep this simple and straightforward for you guys. Stephen is really good at using his Druecraft. He's a very good manifester, so he can manifest Druecraft, which not everybody can do. He also manifested it pretty young comparatively, and so that's another sign of his incredible strength. Now, after some stuff goes on, Lucilla orders her goons to attack Hobbs, his cat, and she leaves him on his porch and is like, hey, I've hurt your cat, like, stay out of my way. And he's like, I was trying to stay out of your way, like, leave me the heck alone. I'm not doing anything. I just want to build up my Drewcraft and find my dad. And it's just, and so then he goes into this fugue state. And this was a really good one where he is just like, I hunted wells. I would find a well. I would check if it was, if I could use it, if it was big enough for a mending sigil that he's kind of figured out. And that's another thing. He's manifesting all these sigils by feel. So he is not following these regimented guides or like figuring out how things work or like, he doesn't have any prior experience. He's like, I need to make it, so I made it. He, you know, has figured out that they have these mending sigils, which a sigil is basically a little gemstone that does the magic. You put your Drewcraft into it, your art into it. It does the thing that you want to do. There are four categories. There's light, matter, gravity, and life. And then there's one called primal, which kind of can substitute for any of the other ones, but not really. It doesn't. It's different. It's interesting. It's really fun, though. But he's best at light. He's looking for a mending one. He finds a church. Turns out it's a primal one. The preacher there, the priest there is like, hey, I know, like, you can't do this. You can't use this. Even if you tried to use it, it wouldn't work because this is a primal well and not a life well. Finally, he is able to find the life well. He's able to craft a mending sigil. And then after that, he's actually able to see the aura in the world and just kind of like see where it flows and how to manipulate it a little bit better. So he has been given this special gift, which he wisely keeps secret. I like that he is very suspicious of these people and about everybody. And he doesn't tell. Now, it was a good thing and a bad thing because it's like, why don't you just tell some people? Like, tell Father Hawk. Now, it took me a while to figure out Father Hawk's name because he kept saying it Father Hawk. And I was like, is it Orc? I don't know if that doesn't make sense. Is it Father Hook? It was just a funny thing while I was reading the audiobook. So, you know, he creates this thing, this sigil, gives it to Hobbs. Hobbs heals, he gets better. He's got great friends that are in and out. Like, this is a good book. It's just a little bit, there's just so much. I feel like I need to keep talking for longer and longer, right? So, now, there is one thing. There are wells. A well is what you use to create a sigil, right? You have to have a well of the right variety, and it has to be strong enough. And we learn all about the strength and everything of wells and how to categorize them, and that was good. But I feel like I just like if a well takes a year to reproduce and he uses basically all of the well whenever he creates a sigil, like I never saw him use part of a well. You know, he never created a sigil and had left over in the well. Now maybe he just wouldn't, because those sigils or those wells are always kept by the houses, and so he just never had the opportunity to get close enough to use a well that had enough power and more for a well. But then it takes about a year for each well to reproduce. So I'm just thinking, like, how on earth are they producing so many sigils that they can use them for things and alarms? And the lifeline of a sigil is very long. You know, it depends on how you create it. It can be longer, it cannot be. But that, you know, you have to attune it so it only works for you or it works for those in your bloodline. So there are a lot of different factors coming into play. And then just the scarcity of these wells that they are, you know, they're once a year used and gone and they're small. But, you know, this kid lets us have a lot of experience with Steven kind of crafting sigils and practicing. And he's able to create a wonderful disruptor sigil, which disrupts somebody having if they have a life sigil to improve their speed or their strength, then they have to balance that out so it balances, you know, their whole body increases at the same level instead of having like, oh, my arm is really strong, or, you know, the sigil was touching my chest, so my pecs are really tough, so when I twist, it like tweaks my back. And he, you know, has that happen where he hurts himself with one that he kind of builds for himself because he didn't have that balancer. But he develops a disruptor to disrupt other people so that he can take advantage of this. And it works really well. And that's really exciting. And then he's trying to deal with the Ashfords at the same time as trying to find his father, who he's gone missing and who kind of taught him everything he knows about Drewcraft. We learn that it's his mom that was, you know, in the Ashford family. And he's been told, hey, your mom had plenty of opportunity to contact you. She never has. Take the hint. Leave her alone. But he's going after his father. He encounters some other people who has to fight and run away from. And then near the end, the Lucel, Calhoun, and Tobias are all kind of vying for the Ashford crown, basically, to be the inheritance, the one who inherits everything. Tobias is a manipulator. Lucella is a kind of a bully, and she just tries to mess things up. And poor Steven is the man in the middle who keeps getting pushed into everything. So Lucella has kidnapped Steven again in order to force him to kind of drain this well that Calhoun is supposed to be guarding. Steven, of course, refuses. But then they meet a man, I'm just going to call him Crow. He is working with Lucella. And Tobias tries to join him, but is denied. And it seems like Lucella has a special gift of persuasion. And it seems like it kind of affects people who are lower than her in either Drewcraft or in, how do I like in the family line. And so since Stephen is equal to her, he kind of falls into it and kind of doesn't fall into it. So sometimes he can be a little bit more affected, but when he's on guard, he's able to resist it. And I know that this is not even covering a teeny part of that book if you've read it, but there's just so much to talk about. So Crow makes an offer to Stephen because he knows that he realizes that Stephen is kind of special and important. And he gives him a kind of a monologue about, oh no, we have to care. We have to make things even so that they're not being held by the power of the house. And because of Father Hawk, whom Stephen has kind of been taking many lessons from, both in Drewcraft and just in like life, he's like, wait a minute, your argument just falls flat. Like, there's no perfect world. No matter what you do, it's not going to be what somebody is going to want, you know? It means, in the most simplest of terms, it's like, if I have a cookie, that means somebody else doesn't have a cookie. And that means that somebody's going to want that cookie. Well, then, if we both want it, but there's only one, how do we rectify that? It's a lot better and deeper in the book than my very simplistic cookie example here. But he turns them down, and at the end of the book, Stephen and Tobias and Lucilla are all kind of on the outs, but Stephen and, you know, Stephen has included them, and they're like, hey, if you guys cause one more issue with Calhoun or you fight him, you're all cut off from me. And Stephen's like, I'm already cut off from you. I don't have anything to, like, worry about. You know, I've never gotten this, whereas Lucilla and Tobias are both like, oh no, this is not good. Now, hopefully we saw maybe a potential love interest for Stephen in this book, the future bride of Calhoun. We'll see. I'm not sure. I kind of thought she was going to play a little bit more into this book, and she did not. So I was a little saddened, interested in that, to see where that goes in the future. But you guys, there's so much to talk about. This was a really good book to read. That's going to wrap up my discussion of An Inheritance of Magic by Benedict Jacka. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to David Hillowitz for the intro and outro music. Of course, if you have any questions or comments, send those to libromancypod@gmail.com. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Leave a review, it always helps. And remember to inherit the magic of books.